when your over-self, or even your subconscious, can examine the problem and come up with a solution, they will often pass the solution into your consciousness, into your memory, so that when you awaken you may exclaim with delighted amazement that now you have the answer to that which was troubling you and which, from thence on, will trouble you no more. Do you like our attic? Let us move on to another little treasure which is lying about collecting a bit of dust. It is time that we looked into it, gave it an airing and let it see the light of day once again. What is in this package? Let us open it and see. Too many people nowadays think that to be truly good is to be truly miserable. They think most mistakenly that one has to go about with a grim, sad face if one is religious. Such people may be afraid to smile, not necessarily because it might crack their face, but it might, which is much worse, crack the facade of their thin veneer of religious belief. We all know of the grim old man who is nearly afraid to smile or is afraid to take the slightest pleasure from life in case he has a miserable time roasting in hell for a moment's lapse from grace. Religion, true religion, is a joyous thing. It promises us life beyond this earth, it promises reward for all that we have striven for, it promises us that there is no death, nothing about which to worry, nothing of which to be afraid. There is a fear of death ingrained in most humans. That is because if one remembered the joys of the afterlife, one might be tempted to end this life and go on to happiness. That would be the same as a boy escaping from the classroom and playing truant, which does not lead to progress. Religion, if we really believe in it, promises us that when we go beyond the confines of this world we shall no longer be in the company of those who truly afflict us, we shall no longer meet those who grate upon our nerves, who sour our soul. Rejoice in religion, for if you have the true religion it is indeed a thing of joy, and a thing about which one, 91, must rejoice. We must confess, with great sadness, that many people who study occultism or metaphysics are among the worst offenders. There is one cult, oh no, we do not give names, who are perfectly sure that they, and they only, are the chosen, they, and they only, will be saved to populate their own little heaven. The rest of us, poor sinning mortals no doubt, are going to be destroyed in various heartily unpleasant methods. We do not subscribe to this theory at all. We believe that so long as one believes, that is all that matters. It does not matter if one believes in religion or in occultism, one must believe. Occultism is no more mysterious or complicated than the multiplication tables or an excursion into history. It is just learning of different things, learning of things which are not of the physical. We should not go into raptures if we suddenly discovered how a nerve worked a muscle or how we could twitch a big toe. They would be just ordinary physical matters. So why should we go into raptures and think that the spirits are sitting all around us if we know how we can pass etheric energy from one person to another? Please note that we say here etheric energy, which is good English instead of prana or any other Eastern terms. We prefer when writing a course in a language to adhere to that language. Rejoice. The more you learn about occultism and about religion, the more you will be convinced of the truth of the greater life, which lies ahead of all of us beyond the grave. When we pass the grave, we merely leave our body behind us in much the same way as one can leave an old suit of clothes to be collected by the garbage man. There is nothing whatever to fear in metaphysical knowledge, nor is there anything to fear in religion. For if you have the right religion, the more you learn about it, the more convinced you will be that it is the religion. Those religions who promise hellfire and damnation if you fall off the straight and narrow path are not doing their adherents a good service. In the old days, when people were more or less savages, it was possibly permissible to wield the big stick and try to frighten some sense into people, but now the outlook should be different. Any parent will agree that it is much easier to control children by kindness than by constant threats. Those parents who keep threatening, 92, to call in a policeman or the bogeyman or to sell their children are the ones who cause a neurosis in the child and, later, in the race. But those parents who can control by firmness and kindness, and have their children living in joy, they are the ones who produce good citizens. We wholeheartedly subscribe to the view that one must have kindness and discipline. Discipline should never mean harshness or sadism. Again, let us rejoice in religion, Let us be the children of the parents who teach with love, with compassion, and with understanding. Let us do away with all the falseness, all the baseness of terror and punishment and eternal damnation. There is no such thing as eternal damnation, no one is ever discarded, there is no such thing as a person being banished from the spirit world. Every single person can be saved no matter how bad he or she has been, no one has to be rejected. The Akashic record, with which we shall deal later, tells us that if a person is so terribly terribly bad that nothing can be done with him for the moment, he is merely delayed in his evolution, and is later given another chance to come along with another round of existence in much the same way as a child who played about in class, and should not pass the end of term examinations, does not move up to a higher grade with his fellows but is kept back to study the curriculum all over again. One would not say that a child is toasted over a slow fire or tossed to hungry devils for mastication because he skipped some of his lesson work or played truant a few times. The teachers assigned to him might talk to him rather more firmly than he liked, but apart from that no harm would come to him, and if he were expelled from that particular school he would soon have to enter another or be in trouble with the truant officer. So with the humans on earth. If you mess up this chance, don't be too disheartened, you will always get another. God is not sadistic, God is not out to destroy us but to help us. We do God a grave disservice when we think that He is always on the lookout to tear us to pieces or toss us to the waiting devils. If we believe in God, let us believe in mercy, because in believing in mercy we shall have mercy, but let us also show mercy to others. While we are on this subject, let us turn over another box, one which has been collecting a lot of dust because no one in the past seems to have been interested in this particular package. Turn it over and see, 93, what it says. According to the Akashic record, the Jewish people are a race who, in a previous existence, could not make progress at all. They did all the things that they should not have done, and they left undone the things that they should have done. They gave themselves up to all the pleasures of the flesh, they became excessively fond of food, fat oily food, so that their bodies became cloyed and clogged, and their spirits were not able to soar into the astral by nights but were instead bound by their gross fleshly envelopes. These people whom we now call Jews were not destroyed nor subjected to eternal damnation. Instead they were set off on a fresh round of existence in much the same way as children who play about in class may even be expelled from that school for unruly behavior, and they may set off to a fresh school and start off in a different class. So for the Jews. In the present round of existence are people who are in a round for the first time, and when they come in contact with the Jews they are puzzled, confused, and afraid. They do not understand what is different about a Jew. They sense that something is different, they sense that a Jew has some knowledge which appears to be not of the earth, and so the man and woman in a round for the first time wonders and fears, and what a person fears that they persecute. Thus it is that the Jews, being an old race, are persecuted because they are having to work their way through a round once again. Some people envy the Jews their knowledge, their endurance, and again, those things which are envied one tends to destroy. But we are not dealing with Jews or Gentiles, we are dealing with joy in religion. Joy, pleasure, makes you learn a thing which you would not learn through terror. There are, we cannot repeat it too often, no such things as eternal torments, there are no such things as fires which are going to send your skin off and make you feel awfully hot about the whole affair. Examine your thinking. Examine that which you have been taught and think how much more reasonable it is that you should have joy and love in your religious belief. You are not responsible for a sadistic father who is going to beat you up or send you into perpetual darkness. Instead, you are dealing with great spirits who have gone through all this long before humans were ever thought of. They have been through it all, they know the answers, they know the, 94, troubles, and they have compassion. So, from our attic treasure we say, rejoice in religion, smile about your religion, have a warm feeling about your God no matter what you call him, for he is ever ready to send down healing waves to you if only you will get this terror, this fright, out of your system. But now it is time for us to leave this attic of ours and to go down the stairs again, those old creaking stairs. But soon, in the next lesson, We shall ask you to rejoin us in the attic once again, for, looking about, we see there are quite a number of little items lying on the floor or on the shelves around which will be of interest and, we hope, profit. May we see you in the attic in the next lesson? Lesson 16. So we meet again in our attic. We have cleaned up the place a bit and discovered a few fresh items. Some of them will perhaps shine a little ray of light onto a doubt which you have had for some time. Look at this for a start. Here is a letter which we received some time ago. It says, shall I read it to you? You write much about fear. You say that there is nothing to be afraid of except fear. In your answer to my question you told me that it was fear that was keeping me back, preventing me from progressing. I am not conscious of fear, I do not feel afraid, so what can the matter be? Yes, that is quite an interesting problem. Fear is the only thing that can hold one back. Shall we have a look at it? Sit down a moment, let us discuss this problem of fear. All of us have certain fears. Some people are afraid of the dark, others are afraid of spiders or of snakes, and some of us may be aware of our fears, that is, we have fears which are in our consciousness. But, wait a moment, our consciousness is only a tenth of us, 9/10 of us are subconscious, so what happens if the fear is in our subconscious? Often we will do things under some hidden compulsion, or we will refrain from doing something because of a hidden compulsion. We do not know why we do a certain thing, we do not know why we cannot do a certain thing. There is nothing on the surface, there is nothing that we can pin down. We act irrationally and if we went to a psychologist and, 95, we lay on that couch for long, long hours, at last it may be dragged out of our subconscious that we had a fear because of something that happened when we were small babies. The fear would be hidden from our awareness, working at us, nagging at us from our subconscious. It would be like termites attacking a wooden framed building. The building to all cursory inspections would appear to be sound, flawless, and then, almost overnight, it would collapse under the influence of those termites. The same happens in the matter of fear. Fear does not have to be conscious to be active. It is most active when it is subconscious because then we do not know that it is there, and, not knowing that it is there is nothing we can do about it. Throughout the lifetime of all of us we have been subjected to certain conditioning influences. A person who has been brought up as a Christian will have been taught that certain things are not done, certain things are distinctly forbidden. Yet people of a different religion, brought up differently, are permitted to do such things. So in looking into the question of fear we have to examine what has been our racial and family background. Are you afraid of seeing a ghost? Why? If Aunt Matilda was kind-hearted and generous, and loved you dearly during her lifetime there is no reason whatever to suppose that she is going to love you less when she has left this life and has gone on to a far better stage of existence. So why fear the ghost of Aunt Matilda? We fear the ghost because it is something alien to many of us. We fear a ghost because it may have been taught in our religion that there are no such things, and that one cannot see a ghost unless one is a saint or an associate of saints, or something. We fear that which we do not understand, and it is worth thought that if there were no passports, no language difficulties, there would be less wars because we are afraid of the Russians, or the Turks, or the Afghanis, or something else because we do not understand them, we do not know what makes them tick, or what they are going to do against us. Fear is a terrible thing, it is a disease, it is a scourge, it is a thing that corrodes our intellect. If we have certain reservations about a thing, then we must dig down and find out why. For instance, why do certain religions teach that there is no such thing as reincarnation? 1.96. Obvious example is this: in the days of long ago the priests had utter power and they ruled people by terror, by the thought of eternal damnation. Everyone was taught that they had to make the best of this life because there would be no other opportunity. It was known that if people were taught of reincarnation they might tend to slack in this life and pay for it in the next. In connection with this, it used to be perfectly permissible in the China of long ago to contract a debt in this life to be paid in the next. It is also worth remarking that China became decadent because the people believed so much in reincarnation that they did not bother much in this life. Instead, they just sat around taking their canaries out in cages under the trees at night, and deciding that they would make up for it in the next life. This one would be more or less of a vacation. Well, it did not work that way, and so the whole Chinese culture became decadent. Once again, examine yourself, your intellect, your imagination. Give yourself deep analysis and find out what it is that your subconscious is trying to bottle up, what it is that is making you so afraid, so worried, so jittery about certain things. When you dig that out, you will find that there are no more fears. It is fear which stops people from doing astral traveling. Actually, as we well know, astral traveling is remarkably simple. There is no effort to it. It is as simple as breathing, and yet most people fear it. Sleep is almost death. Sleep is a reminder of death, a reminder that eventually we shall go off into a deep sleep, and we wonder what will happen to us when death, instead of sleep, claims us. We wonder if during our sleep someone will sever our silver cord and we will be off. That cannot happen. There is no danger in astral traveling. There is only danger in fear that you know, and more danger in fear that you do not know. We suggest again, and again, get down to this problem of fear. That which you know and understand is not fearsome, so get to know and understand what it is that you now fear. We devoted a lot of time to that little incident. Did we not? We must move on, for there is much yet to engage our attention, much yet to be dealt with before we can draw the curtains on this lesson and move on to the next. Look about you, look about in our attic. Does anything in particular attract your attention? Do you see that ornament over there? 97, out of this world, isn't it? Oh. We may have started something with that saying. Out of this world. There are many sayings in common use which are truly descriptive of things. A man might say that he has seen something so beautiful that it was right out of this world. How true that is. When we get beyond the confines of this carbon molecule existence, with all its pains and trials and tribulations, we can hear sounds and see colors and have experiences which are, quite literally, out of this world. Here are we confined in the cave of our own ignorance. We are confined by the bonds of our own lusts, our own wrong thoughts. So many of us are so busy trying to keep up with the Joneses that we have no time to look about us. We have the mundane whirl of existence, we have to earn our living, then there are social obligations. After that we have a certain amount of sleep, so it seems that all our life is planned in one whirl, one mad rush, there is never time for anything. But, wait a minute, is there any need for all this rush? Can we not arrange somehow to have even as little as half an hour each day, and devote it to meditation? If we will meditate, we can get right out of this world. We can, with a little practice, get into the astral and into the next world. The experience is exhilarating, elevating. When we elevate our spiritual thinking, we increase our rate of vibration, and the higher we can perceive on our piano scale. Do you remember that scale? The more beautiful the experiences which we may undergo. Out of this world should be our objective, of course. We want to get out of this world when we have learned our lessons, but not before. Look again at our classroom experiences. Many of us may have been heartily sick of staying in a stuffy classroom on a warm summer's day, listening to the droning voice of a teacher churning out stuff which really had no interest for us. Who wanted to know about the rise and fall of a certain empire? We felt we should be much better off out in the open. We desired above all things to get away from that classroom, that hot and stuffy room with the dull voice droning on. But we could not do so. If we had just run out, there would have been sure retribution from the teachers. If we had skipped our lessons, we should have failed our examinations, and instead of passing on to another grade, we should have been kept back in that same monotonous classroom with another, 98, lot of students who would look upon us as curiosities and dunces because we had failed to make the grade. Let us not, then, get out of this world permanently until we have learned that which we came to learn. We can look forward confidently to joys, to ease and to spiritual perfection when we leave this world for that which is so much more glorious. We should always keep in mind that we are here as one serving a prison sentence under particularly doleful conditions. We cannot see how dreadful this earth is while we are here, but if you could move out now and look down, you would have quite a shock. You would be most unwilling to return. That is why so many of us cannot do astral traveling, because, unless one is prepared, it is indeed an unpleasant experience to return. All the joy is the other side. Those of us who do astral traveling look forward to the days of our release, but we also make sure that while we are in our prison cell we behave as best we may, for if we do not behave we lose our remission time. So, let us do the best we can upon earth so that when we come to pass from this life we are prepared and ready for the greater things of the life beyond. It is worth the small effort involved in living here. We seem to be very busy in our attic, shifting items, knocking the dust off some which have been sorted for a long time, but let us move on to the other side of this room. Let us look at another little item. Many people think that seers are always looking at one's aura, always reading one's thoughts. How wrong they are! A person with telepathic ability, or the power of clairvoyance, is not always reading thoughts or examining the aura of friends or enemies. Some of the things we should see would be far too unpleasant, far too unflattering. Some of them would indeed burst the balloon of our own imagined importance. There is too much else to do. We have in mind a certain person who sometimes visits us. She will start a sentence and utter three or four words, and then trail off with, "But I don't have to tell you anything, do I? You know everything by just looking at me, don't you?" That is not so. We could know everything, but it would be morally wrong to do so. Have no fear about seers, occultists, clairvoyants, and others, for if they are of good morals they will not be peering at your private affairs even with your invitation. If they are not of good morals, 99, they cannot do it anyway. We want to tell you here that the backstreet seer who tells your fortune for a trifle has no real seeing ability. She is usually a poor old woman who cannot make money in any other way. Probably at some time she had clairvoyant abilities. But you cannot do such things on a commercial basis. You cannot tell a person clairvoyantly things about themselves for money, because the mere fact of the passing of money causes the telepathic ability to wane. And the backstreet seer cannot always see, yet, if she has taken money, then she must put on some sort of a show. Being quite a good untrained psychologist, she will let you do the talking, and will then tell you the things that you told her, and you, being deluded by the term seer, will exclaim with wonder at how accurately she has told you what you want to know. Have no fear that clairvoyants are looking at your affairs. Would you be happy if you thought that you were busy in your own home, writing a letter maybe, and someone came into your room, peered over your shoulder and read what you were writing? Would you like that person to go through your possessions picking up this and reading that, and getting to know all about you, getting to know all that you had, all that you thought about? Would you like to think that a person was tuning in all the time to any telephone conversation that you had? Of course you would not. Let us say once again that a person of good character does not read your thoughts all the time, and a person of bad character quite definitely has not the ability. That is a law of the occult. A person of bad character is not clairvoyant. You might hear a lot of tales about a person who sees this and that and something else. Discount 999% of it. A clairvoyant will always wait for you to tell him or her what you want to discuss. The clairvoyant will not intrude into the privacy of your thoughts or of your aura, not even if you invite that clairvoyant to do so. There are certain laws of occultism which must be adhered to most rigidly, for if one breaks those laws one can be punished in much the same way as one can be punished if one breaks a man-made law on earth. Tell the clairvoyant what you want to tell, he or she will know if you are telling the truth. We will go so far as to admit that. Tell the clairvoyant whatever you want to, but make sure that if you do you tell, 100, the truth, otherwise you are deluding yourself only and not in any way deluding the clairvoyant. So, remember once again, a good seer will not read your thoughts and a bad one cannot. Now here is another little item which we might look at. It is this: so you don't get on with your marriage partner? Well, that may be the obstacle which you have to overcome on Earth. Let us put it this way, horses are entered in races, and if one horse wins consistently, and apparently has no great effort in so doing, that horse is handicapped. You can look upon yourself as a horse. You may have gone too quickly, too easily through your last lessons. In that case you may be handicapped with a partner who is not suitable for you. Make the best of it while you can, remembering that if your partner is really incompatible with you, then you will never, never come into contact with him or her in the life beyond this earth. If a man picks up a screwdriver or a hammer that is just a tool which suits the need of a job at hand, the partner can be looked upon as a tool which enables one to do a certain job, to learn a certain lesson. A man may become attached to a screwdriver or a hammer, may become attached to it because it enables him to do a job that he has to do. But you may be sure that a man will not be so attached to his hammer or his screwdriver that he will want to take it with him to the other side. There is so much said and written about the glory of humanity, but we are going to say that humans are not the greatest form of life. Humans on Earth, for example, are truly a rather scruffy lot, sadistic, selfish and self-seeking. If they were not, they would not be upon this earth, because people come to this earth in order that they may learn how to overcome just those things. Humans are greater indeed when they get beyond life. But let us again make sure that we understand that if we have an unsuitable marriage partner here, or unsuitable parents, it may be because we planned that as something which we would have to overcome. A person may have a vaccination or inoculation, they may, for instance, deliberately take a dose of smallpox, by way of inoculation, in order that they may be protected from a more severe and, perhaps fatal dose later on. So it is that our marriage partner or our parents may have been chosen in order that we could, 101, learn certain lessons from associating with them. But, we do not have to meet them again after we have finished this life. In fact, we cannot meet them if they are incompatible with us, for, we must repeat, when we are on the other side of death we are living in harmony, and if people are not in harmony with us they cannot associate with us. Many of us can indeed take comfort from that. But the shadows of night are closing in, the day is coming to an end. We feel that we should not detain you any longer, for you will have much to do before the night falls. Let us leave the attic and close the door gently behind us, close the door upon all the treasures contained therein. Let us descend those aged creaking stairs again, and go our separate ways in peace. Lesson 17. Have you ever had a person walk up to you bubbling with excitement and then, almost grasping your jacket, burst out, "Oh, my dear, I had a most terrible experience last night. I dreamed that I was walking down the street without a single stitch of clothing on. I was most embarrassed." This has happened in various forms and various versions to many people. One may have had a dream in which one was suddenly transported to a drawing room full of elegantly dressed people, and then discovered that one has omitted to put on one's clothing. Or you may have had a dream yourself in which you found yourself standing on some street corner again, either in some outlandish garb, or without any garb whatsoever. That can be, you know, that can have been an actual astral experience. Those of us who can see people doing astral traveling have some amazing and amusing encounters. But this course is not a discourse on witticisms, but instead it is designed to help you on what is, after all, a perfectly normal occurrence. Let us devote this particular lesson to dreams, because dreams in one form or another happen to anybody, to everybody. From time immemorial dreams have been looked upon as omens or signs or portents, and there are even those who purport to tell fortunes by one's dreams. Others consider that dreams are just figments of the 102 imagination when the mind is temporarily divorced from controlling the body during the process of sleep. This is quite incorrect, but let us get down to this dream business. As we have discussed in previous lessons, we consist of at least two bodies. We are going to deal with two bodies only, the physical and the immediate astral, but of course there are many more bodies. When we go to sleep, our astral body gradually separates from the physical body and drifts up from the reclining physical. With the separation of the two bodies, the mind is indeed separated. In the physical body there is all the mechanism in much the same way as one can have a broadcasting station, but when the announcers goes off then there is no one left to send messages. The astral body, now floating above the physical, ruminates for some moments deciding where to go and what to do. As soon as a decision has been reached the astral body tilts feet foremost and settles down usually at the end of the bed. A bird leaving a twig, the body gives a little leap upwards and is gone, soaring away at the end of the silver cord.